Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else. It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, digging into all these anonymous poll questions in The Athletic. This one's interesting. Which baseball writer would you most like to see a Phish concert with? We got 12 votes for AJ Cassavell and 15 votes for Eno Saris, who wins the anonymous poll
of
major leaguers. Congratulations, Eno.
That wasn't in there.
Oh, it was allegedly. Allegedly. How's it going, my man?
All right, we're firing on all cylinders today.
Oh, good. Yeah, you sound like it. Who played?
The wife's away, so I've got lots of things going on.
Yeah, I was like, did you go to a government mule show last night or something?
So,
no, we're good.
Deep pull, nice.
Yes, thank you very much. Why can't the San Diego Padres hit the ball out of the ballpark and everybody else can? You know, at our own park right now, it's getting a bit frustrating.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a part of their philosophy at the plate. I think that their philosophy at the plate is hurting them a little bit. They're definitely a let it travel and hit it the opposite way, and that's good for singles. But sometimes you need to hit for power, and you can see that Tatis is kind of searching for it at the plate a little bit, trying
for
to change his stance a little bit. And I wonder how much that hit on the forearm really hurt him, because he hasn't been that great since.
You know, you're our favorite smart baseball guys, but there are other smart baseball guys around with other publications, including Dan Zimborski, FanGraphs, who wrote a piece yesterday called Luis Arraez Has Entered the Contact Rate Death Spiral. That, of course, caught my attention as being, well, that can't be good for the San Diego Padres if one of their players is in a death spiral. And, you know, he goes through the numbers about how often that Arraez is not just chasing pitches outside the zone, but making contact with pitches outside the zone. And he's so good at it that he's actually maybe hurting himself with his unbelievable skill at making contact with the baseball. And I don't know. I mean, there's no real solution. You know, Dan doesn't really answer the problem. You know, like, what can Arraez do other than maybe, like, see what Tony Gwynn did when he talked to Ted Williams and find a way to add some slug to your game in your later years? Because the way he's trending, you know, and I don't know if you'd agree with this, it's not a good look for Luis Arraez right now on the trend.
Yeah, and, you know, he's by wins above replacement, he's below replacement this year.
Yeah.
So the other flaws, the sort of the fielding, the base running, that sort of stuff, it's starting to add up a little bit too. So, yeah, it's kind of a rough go of it. But, you know, he's still valuable at certain moments in games when, like, anything, the only thing you need is contact. He's so great to have. So it's a little bit of a one-trick pony at this point. But, guys that all they can do is take a walk or hit homers, you know, get deals to join lineups as DHs late into their careers. So I don't know why he doesn't have a role to play in baseball, even if it's not the highest paid one. He's somebody that I want in my lineup. Now, the one thing I have noticed is that I think that he becomes easier to defend after a while, because if he's going to chase outside the zone, particularly like up and away, those balls are landing in short left, in a place where I might just station my left fielder.
They do.
They're doing it.
They're
yeah.
doing it. Yep, they are, because they know he's not going over their head.
Left fielder is just sitting out there.
Sitting there. He's deep
looks
short.
Like, he hits what looks like is an opposite field line drive base hit, but the left fielder's standing right there ready to catch it now.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure that's what Dan was talking about to some extent. And so maybe, like, power is relative here, where, like, what if he can, like, just turn and burn some stuff and pull some stuff and hit some stuff to the wall? Or we've seen him hit homers to the
pull
side.
Pull side.
So maybe just a little bit of pull side attention, you know, could help a lot of these guys. I keep seeing Manny, and Manny does have opposite field power, so it might be okay. But, you know, I keep seeing him sort of slice it to the opposite field, and I want him to, like, really boomstick, you know, connect on the pull side. So in general, I would say, like, letting it travel has been really good for their strikeout rate, and they've strung together a lot of singles. But that also changes the way you get pitched after a while. So I think that, you know, this might be a great time for some of these hitters in the lineup to think, I need to turn and burn right now.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's wild, too, because it's Twitter, it's online, it's call-ins to the radio show, whatever. Man, these guys got to, you know, when they were in that mode a couple years ago, it was, these guys got to, they have to actually, you know, stop trying to hit the three-run homer, man. We got to string some stuff. I mean, bro, it's maddening. It's maddening because nobody really knows what they want. Nobody knows what they want until the results are there. And when you talk about, I like Victor Rodriguez. This approach worked for the Padres last year. And my approach, I think, at Petco Park, too, is like, you got to barrel baseballs. You got to hit them in the gaps. And, you know, then if singles together, not great. Stringing doubles together is really, really good. And we're talking about, you know, a matter of millimeters here on the baseball and on the barrel. Yeah. And it's just when everyone's going bad, you know, for me, I don't know that I want to see Toddy up there ripping for homers right now when he's not even hitting singles at this point. I'm kind of like a break it down to build it back up guy, but I don't know much about it. You know, what is your kind of theory? Like, the Victor Rodriguez principle is gap to gap, but when they're not doing it, it just looks ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, one of the foundational ideas is, like, you know, be ready to go oppo gap on the fastball. And then you'll be early on the slider.
Yeah.
And you'll go pull gap on the slider. And you know, that works. What I tend to see is that, you know, then you kind of start slipping towards just letting it travel. And the Padres have one of the deepest contact points in baseball. And I think you're right. It's millimeters, but, you know, I might just preach, you know, you've heard this before. It's nothing. I'm not, you know, the brain genius here, but like selective aggression,
yes.
Where I think sometimes you think, I'm going to go get this fastball, you know, and I might even pull the fastball. So, and I think that comes from a lot of times is preparation in terms of counts and sort of anticipation. And so you're like thinking along with the pitcher and you're, you know, he goes to fastball 65% of the time in two strike counts. And I don't know if that's the way they prepare. I know there's a lot of teams. I know there's a lot of players who prepare that way. There are also other players that just want to react in the box. So, you know, it's one of those things about finding what works for every single player, and that's what's so difficult about being a hitting coach.
Last thing for me, you know, we saw the Dodgers kind of go with an opener the last 2 days, although Kasperius did go four yesterday. But we've actually seen less of that. There was a trend for a while, like the Rays were doing it all the time. A lot of teams were doing it. Now there's less of it. How effective really is it? You know, what are they trying to accomplish there with going with an opener for an inning or two?
Well, one of the hardest innings in baseball, the two hardest things other than the ninth are the first and the sixth. The reason the first is so difficult is because you know their best hitters are coming up, the top of the lineup. And the reason the sixth is so hard is that that's the third time through the lineup. So what the opener does is say, hey, I'm going to use a reliever when I know the best hitters are up, and I'm going to push that third time to the lineup into the seventh or eighth, and then I can have another reliever there. And so then I'm just using my starter for for two times through the order in the middle of the game, and they can maybe go three times through the bottom of the order. You know, like you can play around with who they see. The reason why it kind of went away, I think, is that in order to do this right, you have to have a really deep bullpen because you have to use a guy that is good, you know, good enough to, you know, strike out or, you know, handle their top three hitters. But you also don't know if you're going to win that game. And normally you use your best relievers in games you think you're going to win. So if you start just using your third or fourth best reliever in these games where, uh-oh, it didn't go our way, and we use Jason Adam, or, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You want to save your best relievers for games you think you're going to win. And I think that's why openers have kind of gone away. People still use it, but now they started to use it with, like, hey, let's use a sixth starter who's not stretched out, you know, and let's, like, it's almost more like piggybacking where you have two guys that can go two or three innings and you kind of combine them, maybe righty-lefty. It was supposed to be Robleski if it wasn't
And then they never used him. We're out of time. You know, I never heard it put that way, though, and it really kind of explains it well. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate it. Eno Saris from The Athletic.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.